Roger Thomas keeps trying to get me to move to his hometown, Oreck, Missouri.
We are really close to Kansas City. 210 Highway is a good highway. You can get to Liberty in 25 minutes. You can be downtown Kansas City in less than 45 minutes.
Why live here instead of living in one of those places?
We have an extremely good school. It's a nice, quiet community. There's no crime here. People are friendly here. We invite people. I'll invite people here.
Right now, we're at the school in Oreck, where Roger is subbing for the middle school gym teacher because there's nothing he won't do for Oreck.
Okay, you know what you're going to do on the count of three? Jog to the back. One, two, three.
This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're taking you on a field trip to Oreck, Missouri, where newly elected mayor and substitute teacher Roger Thomas is our guide. He's showing us around a place we don't know very well, and that's the point. We've been visiting the edges of our listening area, trying to learn about communities we don't hear from quite as often, to find out what people are talking about there. And in Oreck, which is just about 30 miles northeast of Kansas City, people are talking about reinvention. Today, Oreck is home to 799 people, just one shy of 800. In the last 50 years, it's suffered some devastating blows. Two major floods and two hellish tornadoes. Between natural disasters, the transformation of farming, and the widespread decline of rural America, Oreck has dwindled to a few square blocks. The main drag, right across from the train tracks, has just a few open storefronts. A community center, a Lions Club, a bank, and a cafe with home-style cooking. If it weren't for the cafe, which is bustling three meals a day, things would be really quiet here. And the cafe is for sale. But Mayor Roger is a dreamer. He'll tell you that himself. And he's on a mission to reinvent this place.
See where that white building is out there?
Yeah, I do.
I grew up just to the left of it. I grew up where Bloody Bill Anderson was killed. You ever heard of Bloody Bill Anderson?
It rings a bell.
Quantrill's Raiders in the Civil War. Bloody Bill.
It's a windy day in May, and Roger's showing me around town.
Grew up like with Bloody Bill buried, like,
well, Bloody Bill wasn't there. They took him to Richmond, buried him in Richmond, but his guys are buried out there. Yeah.
Dang. Did you grow up feeling like you had like ghosts around you and stuff?
I grew up thinking it was fun to play in a graveyard because we would play in that graveyard all the time. You can actually see our house. See that house right the street out there? If you see the telephone pole, see the tree, to the left of the telephone pole, there's a house.
I do see that.
Yeah, there, it's right there.
Roger went to school all 12 years in the building where he now substitute teaches.
I'm a Bearcat through and through. I tell people that if you cut my skin, it bleeds black and gold blood.
Wait, what exactly is a Bearcat?
Well, it's a cross between a bear and a big, mean cat.
Roger says he moved to Oreck when he was three, which makes him an outsider here.
It's not just Oreck. That's the way it is in any small town. You know, and you grow up and you have to become accepted. And it's the same way here, I think. Oreck is a welcoming town, though. You have to become part of the town. I mean, I started school here. And even in elementary school, there were people that had been here forever. And as you get older, you start becoming part of it.
By being here forever, that means like their great-grandparents are from here.
If you look at this town, there are names of people that have been here, the history of the town. There's names of people that have been here since the town was founded.
So as a kid, how did you feel that you were an outsider?
Oh, you could just tell. There were names of people that their families had been around for a long time, and if you weren't one of them, you knew you weren't one of them, but then you became accepted. And now my name is one that's been around for a long time.
So you've worked for your place in this town.
I've worked for my place in this town, yeah.
And people. Now your phone's just blowing up.
Yeah, now my phone's going crazy.
Roger's phone is going crazy because there's another radio station coming to town in about a week, Q104 Country Music. A bunch of people are group texting each other and Mayor Roger to get ready for it. He's part of the inner circle now, someone in the know. Back at the school, Roger shows me a display of giant photos mounted on the wall. One of those poster dealies you have to flip through.
These are senior pictures. These are pictures of everybody that graduated from this school from 1938. I know this lady. I know this woman. You know, this was my older brother.
Class of
63. 63. This is my older sister. I don't need to show you all of these. I'm in here. My wife's here. My younger brother's in here. You know, if this tells you anything. My kids, I could go down further here and show you my two kids. I was in here in 1967, a tornado hit this school. A friend of mine died right over there. Another friend of mine died in the egg shop.
That tornado
of 67.
Where were you in the building during that tornado?
Down at the end.
End of that same hall where your friend died?
This hall right here. Well, the one boy was right there. Another boy was in the egg shop. I was at the end that that was the only room that didn't get damaged in the tornado, and the reason our room didn't get damaged was the window blew open and equalized the pressure in that room. We got hit again in 14. Same thing happened, except it was on a Saturday, and it blew the roof off again, so we rebuilt. If you would like to walk down this way, I'll show you what happened then. I know you wanted to go around town, but the school is the heart of the community, so this is what happened. In 14, the tornado hit, tore the end off the school again, and it blew the egg shop away again. So we rebuilt again in 14. It ruined the gym floor again. We had to replace the gym floor. This is brand new.
You know, I mean, a lot of people might think going through stuff like that would not give you, like, this warm feeling. It would be like terrible things happened and I want to forget them and go someplace else, but that doesn't sound like,
I mean. It makes us tougher. It just makes us want to come back and do it and build it again and keep going. This is our town. This is where we live. This is a place that we have to keep going.
I love that you're saying that with a sign behind you that says the difference between a successful person and others is not a lack of strength, not a lack of knowledge, but rather a lack of will.
Yeah. This is this is our home. This is where we fight. We fight and we try to win. My wife teaches here. My wife's classroom is right over there. I'm biased. I'm extremely biased.
And how often do you substitute teach PE?
I don't substitute teach PE that all. I substitute wherever they ask me to substitute. Because I was on the school board, I substituted as a volunteer. I didn't get paid for it. I couldn't get paid for it, which was fine. Now that I'm not on the school board anymore, they pay me, so I substitute whenever they ask me to do it. I didn't really care.
Before Roger Thomas was a substitute teacher and mayor, he was a traveling salesman for 40 years. And he had to spend a lot of time away from Oreck.
And I didn't really like being gone, but it was what I had to do for a living.
Yeah.
My wife and I left here. My job transferred us away. And we were gone for 3 years, and at the end of the 3 years, I couldn't stand it. I quit the job.
Where did it take you?
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And Tulsa was just no match for Oreck.
No. We did not like living there. It wasn't a match for Oreck. It wasn't home. I've traveled around the world. My job took me around the world. And I always could not wait to get back to here.
What was the first thing you would do when you got back here?
You know how the Pope gets off the airplane and kisses the ground? I never actually did that, but that's how I always felt. And I'm serious.
I know you are. I can see that in your eye.
Now that he's retired, Roger is totally committed to his town.
I'm not a farmer. It's not the same to me. This is just, it's my heart is here. Like I said, I moved away. I moved away from here 3 times, and I couldn't stay away. It pulls me back here. The school pulls me back. The town pulls me back. My children moved away and won't come back. It hurts me that they feel that way.
Why did they move? Was it because they wanted to be in another place or because they needed work and that's where the work was?
Well, my daughter married someone that lives in Topeka, so she moved away. My son moved away for work, you know, and that's why a lot of people moved away, is because of work. But I talk to the kids all the time here at school about moving away, getting an education, and coming back and making their homes here. This is a nice place. I know some people say, well, I don't like it here. People talk. People, you know, they got the small town thing. They worry about, I have to get back inside. They worry. Yeah, I really do. You ready for sit-ups? On your back. No. Are you ready? Up one. Up two. Up three. Up four. Up five. Up six.
You said you give them a speech about, you know, go away, go to school, and then come back. Do any of the parents object to that?
I don't know. Don't care. That sounded bad, didn't it? I really don't. I talked to him. But I talk to him about that kind of stuff all the time. Go away, you know, get an education, but come back. I try to tell him that. I talk to these kids about a lot of things.
Roger Thomas ran for mayor of Oreck earlier this year. He defeated the incumbent 109-56. Quite the validation for this former outsider who didn't move here until he was 3. He took it as a mandate that the people of Oreck wanted a change. But what to do? Soon after he took office, Roger called the town meeting. He wanted everyone to get together to brainstorm and come up with a great idea for Oreck's big comeback. KCUR's Laura Ziegler was there.
So it felt like a ton of people came into this community center. And the community center, you have to understand, was purchased by the people of Oreck. They sold the ceramic tiles that are actually lining the walls of the community center. They're depicting the Oreck 4-H and the Oreck Volunteer Firemen's Association. Mayor Thomas has called this town meeting the Oreck Community Enhancement Organization launch. And it's been his brainchild since he thought about thinking of running for mayor, a way to make Oreck a better place. And he's got lots of ideas about how to make that happen. Some of them you might think are kind of zany.
I'm sure everybody in here knows that we want to have that contest for the best looking yard and house in town. Now, I've got a really good idea that we want it to run June, July, and August. I got a really good idea that we want to give away first, second, and third place prize. After that, I'm lost. So I need some people to join the group to set up the rules for it. And I already had Darian Odell Burnett and her mom, Angie, volunteer to be in that group. Can we get a couple more people to volunteer to help with that?
And so it went for the next 2.5 hours. People broke up into committees to brainstorm different ideas. The mayor encouraged them to think of their most outrageous, wild, and quixotic ideas about their vision for Oreck.
Maybe even tie in the flowers, put some potted plants up on the
street lamps.
Street
exactly.
Lamps, yeah. You know, something viney and yes. Bright.
Laura, how many people were at this meeting? What was the feeling there?
Well, let me say that there was a buzz. There was a real buzz in the room. You could just feel the excitement. And there were, like I said, there were about 100 people there. And for a town of 799 people, that's a lot of people, and it's not a very big space.
What are some of the things that came up, things we haven't heard or that the mayor proposed?
Well, for example, he came up with this idea that maybe Oryk would be the kind of place that could put quilt squares on their buildings. And in fact, he already has a little quilt square on his house, above his garage. He thought maybe people would come to Oryk to see a town where the homes and outbuildings had quilt squares displayed. He also has come up with the idea to make Oryk a destination for people who want to see this incredible solar eclipse that's going to happen in August. And here he is talking about that to me.
St. Joe, all the towns in the line of that eclipse have been sold out for 2 years. There's scientists, there's people that, I mean, you will not be able to get in those towns on that day. There's talking gridlock, traffic gridlock, because they're going to have 3 minutes of total eclipse. We're going to have like 2 minutes. Nobody knows we're here. I hope what we try to do is sell people on the idea, hey, come down here, you'll be able to get in and out.
And about that, Gina, the school already has this plan, or maybe has even already started to make T-shirts and these special glasses. You know, you can't look at the sun during the solar eclipse without special glasses. So I think they maybe have already been making these special glasses that say Oryk on them to sell for people that they anticipate are going to come to watch the solar eclipse.
We've both had the chance to spend some time with Roger Thomas in Oryk. What are your impressions? Do you think he's a visionary, or do you think he's this kind of unrealistic guy?
I'd say a little of both. I think he's really a little of both. He would describe himself, I'm sure you heard him say this, as a dreamer, as idealistic, as a salesman. So I think we both kind of had that experience of him, too. He's super passionate about Oryk, of course. Particularly the school. He goes to everything, the football games, the basketball games, the theater performances, the talent shows. He really sees the school, and other people said this too. I don't know if you heard that, but other people said too that the school is really the center, the heart and soul kind of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. He sees that as the future, you know, the future of the town, sort of dovetailing with all of these great things that he wants to happen there.
But about that salesman piece of it, he carries that tattered monogrammed briefcase, leather briefcase that feels like you've been carrying that since you were a salesman, but he still carries it with that like purposeful stride. And when he starts talking to you about Oryk, you do feel like you're getting kind of a pitch.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's his MO through and through.
Laura, how much power does the mayor actually have? I mean,
yeah, well, that's funny, Gina. It's something that the mayor talked to me about, and I talked to the mayor about in conversations with other officials who run the city. I've kind of always wanted to do this, but this gave me an opportunity to search out or to kind of explore the way a small-town city government operates. Something interested me the last time we talked, or one of the last times we talked, and you said, I don't really know the city budget. You know, I was just visiting over there with Deanna. You know, I think people listening to this would find it surprising that the mayor of the town doesn't know the budget.
I've only been mayor for 6 weeks.
Yeah, but didn't you have to, like, debate about the budget or talk about it before?
We didn't debate about anything.
Sorry.
We didn't debate about anything. We just ran. You know, it's running for mayor in a small town's a popularity contest. It's who likes who. And I will get to the budget. I just haven't looked at it. I mean, I look at it every month. I see we get a sheet that tells what money's going where. There's not a lot of money to look at in a little bitty town. It's not like we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, Deanna just told me it was something like $500,000 or, no, $300,000, something like that, $250,000. Yeah. I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars.
But it's not a huge budget. You've got money has to go into certain places. It has to
go. Right, she's got like 8 accounts or 9 accounts. Yeah. And she writes checks for a lot of them.
Yeah, but it has to go in certain places. There's not a lot of wiggle room in it. I mean, it has to go here, it has to go there. There's not a lot she can do with it. And there's not, I mean, considering this place has a larger budget than the city does.
The school.
Yeah.
So on the heels of that conversation, I decided to dig in and find out more about how the small city of Oreck operates. When I showed up at the Oreck City Council meeting, the first Monday of the month, things are running pretty smoothly. At the top of Mayor Thomas's agenda is getting Public Works to do something about the water that's collecting behind Nathan Claypole's house, and next, whether to spring for a new computer for Dale Bosley, who monitors the water and sewer systems. The four council members and the mayor sit in folding chairs around a couple of long folding tables in the Lions Club, where the council always meets. They're sailing through this month's agenda.
Okay, Chapter 80 of the Ordinances of the City of Oreck shall hereby amended to include a section 015 for the collection of use tax.
I'll make a motion to accept the ordinance.
I'll second it.
But all the votes don't go that smoothly. There are some fireworks when Police Chief Ray Dinwiddie asks the council to keep the summer curfew at 11 o'clock if it's extended as proposed. The chief says the problem of property damage and trash is going to get worse.
Right now they can do it till 11. But if you change that to midnight, you're still inviting everybody in three counties to come loiter in your town till midnight. I can't differentiate between kids who live here and anyone else.
I understand.
They got tired of
Chief Dinwiddie's only been in Oreck for 8 years. He worked before as a cop in Independence, Missouri. And some think he doesn't really get the kids in Oreck. But to Mayor Thomas, these kids are everything. They're the future of the town. He wants to give them a reason to like this town, to come back. He even wants to give them pizza to keep them here on weekends.
The kids said they wanted to be able to go out and sit and talk on the stage and throw ball around and you know, and the pizza thing is just inviting them up there and saying, meet you guys, and tell them, hey, you guys
can... know us.
Not all of them. You might think you know them, but you don't know all those kids up there.
Go ask them. They know my name.
Councilman Todd Weiss speaks up to say maybe the mayor's on to something.
Because I'm going to be honest. My son, he's 21 now, but he was 16. And they would leave town because there was nothing for them to do, nowhere to congregate.
As a parent, Weiss says he worries more about his kids doing whatever they do somewhere out in the country, and he proposes a short-term compromise to the mayor's idea.
Can we try to move forward and let him try to do what he wants to do and see if it works?
Sure.
And if it doesn't, then we have to deal with what we deal with.
No.
And the proposal passes. Here's the thing I saw in Oreck. The government operates super close to the people. The issues may not be all that different than they are in a bigger city, but as the mayor tells me at one point, it's more about relationships here than money. And the money there is, it's really up to the city council to decide where it goes. And once the council decides, it's city clerk Deanna Hufford's job to parcel it out. Today, Deanna Hufford is at a desk by herself behind a small sliding glass window at City Hall. City Hall is a building that looks kind of like a little cabin on the main drag, accessed by several wide steps.
I am originally not from Oreck. I've lived here, 33 years.
Hufford moved here with her husband, who's a native of Oreck. She started working for the city 3 years ago after her job with an air conditioner supply company was outsourced to Panama. She's Oreck's CFO, city manager, and communications director, among other things, and says it hasn't been easy to learn how to manage a city with a $280,000 budget.
There's just not a lot of money in the small municipalities. Of course, we don't have the expenses that the bigger places have, but little bitty municipalities, you know, we struggle. I mean, every dime that comes in is going back out just to keep the city running. There's no fluff, so we have to be very careful with our pennies.
Today, she's paying bills. In front of her are a half dozen or so plastic checkbooks, just like the one I have in my wallet. She's got a stack of handwritten invoices, and when she writes out the checks, she staples them to the invoice and seals them into an envelope. She's got 12 accounts to balance.
This is our regular water account where the water bills come in. Mm-hmm. The general account is where any tax money comes in. So those are the accounts that I manage on a daily basis.
Good morning, City Hall.
That's the city's cell phone. It's Linda. We're not using her last name. She wants to let Hufford know she's bringing her water bill up by the end of the day.
No, you'll be fine. That'll be great. Yep, I'm here till 5:30.
Hufford says it's going to be a busy day at City Hall. It's the last day to pay the water bill, before the water is turned off. I'm thinking, what if Linda doesn't pay her bill and Deanna sees her the next day at Fubler's Cove, the one diner in town? What's that going to be like?
You know, I may know this person, you know, really well, but once you set that boundary, they know, you know, that you can't treat them any differently than you do anyone else.
Being in Orrick reminds me that governing on any scale is messy, and that's something that seems really important at this time. And at the end of the day, it's about the people. The city did have to disconnect two households from their water supply last month. And last Friday, there was pizza and a DJ, so kids could hang out and talk on Front Street until midnight.
That was KCUR's Laura Ziegler, who's been visiting Orrick, Missouri, alongside the Central Standard team. After the break, we'll head to a nearby town that Roger is obsessed with, because that town managed to find the thing that changed everything. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and for today's show, we're taking you to the town of Orrick, Missouri, just about 45 minutes northeast of Kansas City. It's a river town with a declining population, a trend that has to do with changes in agriculture and some bad luck with floods and tornadoes. But Orrick has an enthusiastic new mayor. He wants to put the town back on the map, as they say. One of the places he's been eyeing is a town just north of Orrick, where a startup business grew so fast that they've managed to defy the bleak forecast for small-town rural America. KCUR's Frank Morris checked it out a couple years ago.
One weird thing about the little town of Hamilton, Missouri, is the variety of license plates you see parked along the main street here. There's Colorado, Virginia, Illinois, here right in a row. You see a lot of women on the street. And then there are men, mainly older men, sitting on benches outside the shops.
I'm Dean Hales in Hamilton, Missouri. I lived here. I came to Hamilton when I was in the second grade, January the 25th in 1938.
These days, Hale is the exception. Most of the guys you see sitting on these benches come from out of town, overseas even. Pretty amazing, considering that a few years ago, forlorn, abandoned buildings marred the main drag here. Hamilton looked like a thousand other forgotten rural towns.
I can't hardly believe what I'm seeing. It's just like when you got people coming from all over the world to a little town of 1,800 people, you got something pretty special.
They've got Missouri Star Quilt Company, 15 freshly remodeled buildings in Hamilton, full of fabric, sewing machines, and customers. Della Badger drove in here from Victorville, California.
Listen, I just looked on my map and asked Siri, how do I get to Hamilton, Missouri? But it was my dream to get here and see Jenny.
Badger's talking about someone she knew only through YouTube, Jenny Doan.
Hi, I'm Jenny from the Missouri Star Quilt Company, and I have such a fun project for you. This is easy and quick, but it looks like you've just worked so hard. So
Doan's how-to quilting videos have drawn more than 50 million views.
I know, it's some crazy thing like that. It's like, you know, so just so you know, I can't hardly even use the bathroom in a restaurant without somebody saying, I love your tutorials. I'm like, well, that wasn't one of them.
Doan says it's because she takes an easygoing approach to what's traditionally been a daunting and tedious craft.
Quilting has always been something that's like really for the elite. It's kind of a hard thing to do. You know, everything has to be cut perfectly. And I'm like, just whack it up. We're going to put it together. This is going to be awesome.
She says women from around the world visit Hamilton or Wright to thank her for getting them into quilting.
This has absolutely been the sweetest, most serendipitous thing that has ever happened to me.
And this business would not have happened if Jenny had been a better financial planner.
My parents have always been bad with money.
Alan Doan, Jenny's son, says the recession cost his folks their savings and threatened to take their house.
And so me and my sister were looking at it. We said, we got to put something together so that mom can make a little extra cash.
So in the fall of 2008, Doan and his sister took out loans and set their mom up with a business sewing other people's quilts together. Customers kept asking for fabric, so Alan built a website to sell it.
World, we're open, and you expect somebody to care, right? And so we launched the website, and I still have my Facebook post. I went and looked at it the other day, but it's like, hey, I launched this quilt shop for mom. You guys should check it out. It has like 2 likes.
Doan was selling, well, trying to sell a relatively new product,
pre-cut fabric. The pieces come bundled together from the factory in a pack with different complementary prints, making it much easier and faster to make good-looking quilts. But 1 year in, business was terrible.
Alan came to me and said, Mom, are you interested in doing tutorials? And I said, sure, honey, what's a tutorial? I mean, I had no idea. I had never been on YouTube. You know, I was the generation that said, get off that computer and do something. You know, I was always telling Alan, I've apologized several times.
Because Alan was right. The videos featuring pre-cut fabrics eventually took off. Sales exploded, and now Missouri Star Quilt employs more than 180 people, sewing, staffing stores, and, like Mindy Lloyd, shipping thousands of packages a day from the company's huge new warehouse in Hamilton.
This one's going to Australia. That neat. I had one yesterday. I don't even know where it was going now. Morocco or something?
We had to learn how to do this from, like, watching YouTube videos on how Amazon does it or something, right? We built this warehouse, and I just called all the smart people I knew and said, how can we do this?
Success has pushed the company into publishing, even food service.
We're lucky, very blessed business people with no vision. When I come in every morning, I do the best I can, and we take advantage of as many opportunities as we can.
They're renovating more buildings. By midsummer, they plan to double the number of quilt shops in Hamilton. They're even doing something to get some of those men that I mentioned earlier off the street.
Yeah, it's going to be in here. It's going to be our man's land, like couches and TVs and stuff. You look up and down the street. I mean, most of these good, sweet husbands will drive their wives here and then have to find something to do for 2 hours.
The Doans aren't the first people from Hamilton to develop a serious knack for retail. James Cash Penny Jr. landed his first sales job here almost 120 years ago. Penny left Hamilton a teenager, but came back years later a tycoon and opened his 500th J.C. Penney store. It's not likely the Missouri Star Quilt Company can match that, but it has transformed this once sleepy little town into a quilting mecca.
That was Frank Morris in Hamilton, Missouri. Mayor Roger Thomas back in Orrick has certainly heard of Hamilton.
That town was no better than ours. It was bigger than ours. It's the county seat. It was bigger than ours, but their stores were empty. Their storefronts were empty. But that town is back full of people again. Tour buses go in there on weekends. We have to figure out a way to get people to come here.
Roger's thinking about quilting too. His wife's even been hanging quilt squares on houses. Who knows? Maybe people will come to Orrick to see them too. As he leads me through town, we make a lot of stops. Everywhere we go, Roger's got dreams and ideas overlaid with history and memories.
I want to show you the old school. The last class graduated out of here in 1954, and after it was a school, it was an apartment. When I was a kid, when people got married, this is the first place they lived. For about the last 20 years, it's sitting in disrepair. And I'm not bragging about this, but I've mowed the place for the last 4 years. It's been in, it's always been in foreclosure, I guess, for the last 4 years. And we're trying right now to get a hold of it, to get control of it. It's a cool building. I don't want to see it torn down.
What's it like inside?
It's really neat. Looking on the inside, it's got a really fancy staircase. It's got good hardwood floors in it. The walls on that building are 18 inches thick. I don't know what we can do with it, but we'll do something with that building. I feel really confident. What I want to talk about is the building next door was a roller skating rink.
Funny, it's a cinder block structure, it looks like.
Yeah, cinder block building.
And it's kind of low. It's salmon colored on one part and then gray on the other.
When I was a kid, this is where we went. They were open on Wednesday night and Saturday night for skating. And a lot of times on Friday nights, there was a dance there. Well, the people got old and they retired. They closed the skating rink. They kept the skating rink floor. And I knew them real well, too. When I was a young man, I used to work for them. I would work on roller skates. I would put new ends on the shoestrings, you know, and work on the skates, and they would ask me periodically if I would wanted to buy the floor of the skating rink. Of course, I didn't have any money. I couldn't buy the floor of the skating rink. I wish I did. It's under foreclosure now, I think. This part is. The guy who owned it died last week.
I'm sorry
for that, too. I don't know what's going to happen to it. I wish that we could figure out a way to own it.
Well, in your wildest dreams, like money is no object, you know, anything can happen. What happens in there?
It would be a skating rink again.
Even if the kids today don't go skating?
Yeah. Because I think that they might be interested in skating again. They might be interested in dancing again. Give them something to do. We have to have something for the kids to do.
You talk about that you don't want to tear things down because people have memories there. It seems like you're very attached to memories.
What's that mean?
I don't know. I want you to tell me about it.
Well, I think I'm attached to memories, but I think we could do things with like that old school building. We could do something with that building. We could put a museum in it. We could put an art thing in it for people that want to do crafts. We could do something with that building that could bring people down here.
That thing you can do that will get it all started again?
Right. We're trying to figure out that thing we can do. I'm glad you said that, to get it all started again. Because there is something. You just have to hit the right niche. That's my goal, to get people to say, wow, this school town ought to live here. Maybe they'll buy a piece of land and build a house. Maybe somebody then will say, this is really neat. I'd like to open up a winery here. What's the wineries bring in? That brings in younger people. I have a dream. I really do. Maybe that'll bring in more people. Maybe this piece of land out north of town here, somebody will say, well, you know what? I think instead of growing corn here, I'll build houses. And then that school that's only got 288 kids in it now will get back up to that 700 kids, because we got room in there for 700 kids. That's what my goal is.
Roger has not settled on just one vision for Oryk, but his aspirations for the town always come back to the school. And the camaraderie of the town, that too. That's what these projects really inspire. Take the community center as an example. It's a quaint old two-story building that someone's clearly been taking care of. On a weekday morning, the doors are closed and the lights are off, but through the windows, you can see art projects covering the walls.
When I was a boy growing up, this was a variety store. Actually, this whole lot was filled with buildings just like this.
Two levels, a little balcony.
The people who owned the building lived upstairs, and their store was downstairs. A bunch of us got together and bought that 15 years ago. It might not have been that long, and redid it. And the downstairs is fixed up where you can have meetings. The upstairs is fixed up. There's a library up there. There's a food pantry downstairs. There's a clothes closet upstairs. If people need food, they can get food. Clothes. If they need clothes, they can get clothes.
I saw that there's a sign that says there's an Opry there.
First Friday, a bunch of older people. I don't want to say old, but older people come in and they play music.
What kind of music?
It's old country music. Old country music.
That sounds charming.
Well, I tell you what, if you come here, there's a lot of people in there, but they're all 70 years old and older. And that doesn't bring kids into our school. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
It probably is awesome to some people. It's just not awesome to young people. Wait a minute, you're a young person, so maybe it is awesome to young people. I don't know.
The empty lot next to it, there's a sign that says there's a farmer's market. Are there a lot of farmers around here who grow things to sell at a farmer's market, or is it mostly like commodity?
No, it would be gardens. Somebody has a garden and they have extra vegetables. So on Friday night, they can come up here and sell tomatoes, corn, radishes, lettuce, that kind of thing.
Gotcha. Farmers markets, country music, great schools. Okay, but seriously, what would it take for me to move to Oryk? Well, let's see. I have a one-year-old son, and when I imagine raising him in a place like Oryk, I guess I think about how much space he'd probably have to run around and how the slower pace might free us all up to spend more time together without so many hassles and distractions. But that might just be me romanticizing country life, because there are always going to be hassles and distractions. That's just life. And Roger tells me I couldn't buy a house here because none are for sale. Plus, I can't help but feel like those few blocks of mostly boarded up storefronts just wouldn't be enough over time. The Opry sounds cool, but what if we wanted to hear other kinds of music or see a play or visit a bookstore? There's one restaurant, which, you know, I'm not going to knock that. If you're from there, when you go to that one restaurant, all your friends are inside. The best thing Oryx got is that sense of community. So if I were going to build on that, I'd think about something like an arts residency. That would bring in new people. Maybe their projects could fill some of those empty old buildings with something totally unexpected. And it could spark some of the things young families probably expect if they're going to go to the trouble of moving someplace new. Things like access to culture, interactions with people from other places and different backgrounds, some connection to life beyond those few blocks for people who don't bleed black and gold. We're at a diner in Oryx, Missouri, a restaurant that's the main gathering spot for this town almost an hour northeast of Kansas City. As you walk in the door, you hear townspeople greeting one another, updating each other on their health, their families, that kind of thing. Inside, it's a pretty bare-bones place with wood floors and big round tables, but it's very homey. Everything is forest green and mustard yellow. All the signs are hand-lettered. Old-timey kids' bicycles and toy fire trucks hang from the ceiling. And the tables really fill up. Older men wear work clothes and hats with the names of farm equipment distributors on them. And people routinely pick up one another's tabs on the sly.
You know what you want to eat, man?
Sure, hamburger and fries. What else?
With no onion?
No onion.
We've come to Oryx just as the town's new mayor is leading a major drive to attract new visitors and residents. And Fubler's Cove is definitely going to play a big role in that mission. On Friday nights, the Walleye Special attracts visitors from throughout the region, even Kansas City, and the line goes out the door. But on a weekday just before lunch, a handful of old-timers sit at a big table under a sign that says Liar's Table.
Like it says, Liar's Table, we come here and lie to each other every morning.
The Liar's Table. Yeah, the Liar's Table.
When did it get that name?
Kim put it on there, the waitress. She put it there because she'd listen to us every morning, so she just put that up to aggravate us, more or less. She knows us pretty well.
Yeah. Gossip. And it, they do.
That's Cindy and Scotty Cazell. They come here every day.
We come in at 6, and then I go home and get hurt, and we come back. He sits there, and Sparky sits there. I generally sit down there.
Cindy and Scotty tend to despair about the younger generations and their lack of involvement in the town or anything, really. Cindy's not very optimistic about Oryx's future.
The town is dying. Slowly every day, it's just a little bit more. And when it's what this town will be is all old people. And, of course, we're going to die off. And I don't see anybody coming in to stay here. There isn't anything for them. When you can go to Liberty or Excelsior or whatever and get everything you want, and you pay the same amount of rent down here that you do in Liberty, where are you going to go? You're going to go to Liberty, where you have the better advantage. You can go to the grocery store 5 minutes. Where up here, you know, down here, there's nothing.
Every morning at Fubler's, you can see the kind of camaraderie that makes Oryx, Oryx. People pitching in to help out. Christy and Dave Nail also come here every day. They're both from farming families that go generations back.
Well, I do remember Grandpa raised potatoes, which Oryx is known for their potato production back then. And a few years ago, we had a potato festival.
So much has changed in agriculture since then. Now, Christy and Dave farm about 5,000 acres of land right on the Missouri River. They plant strictly commodity crops, corn, soybeans, sometimes wheat. When you ask Christy and Dave what's really important to them about Oryx, what makes it worth saving, it's odd, but they keep coming back to the disasters, like the flood of 1993.
Actually, it was the day of the potato festival. And we got word that a levee had broke. And so people during all the festivities, we saw trucks going through town. Well, some people in the bottoms were moving out. They got so scared. Well, that was not the big one. The big one came, July 25th, I think?
24th or 25th, somewhere in there, that range.
And the water was starting to come into Oreck. You could just see it starting to come into Oreck. Well, people started moving out. Well, even where David and I live, my dad at that time was still alive, and I said, what should we do? And he said, this flood's not like the 51 flood. He said, this is different. And he said, you all should move out just to be safe. So we did. We live in a two-story house, and we moved everything to the second level of our home, or else just moved. We put like refrigerator and stuff like that in a truck. And that's where our community, you know, people were saying, have you got a truck we can use? Can you all come help us? I mean, that's the way it was. They just walked down the street and said, do you need help? Yeah, we need help. We need a truck. Well, I know somebody's got a truck. So that's the way it was. And we did move out. Luckily, we were one of the lucky ones. We had no water in our house. It got in our cellar. And we had to have a new water system put in, but we were lucky.
Are there ways that the town has never gone back to being what it was before that flood? Are there things that changed and changed for good?
Oh, besides the enrollment and our population, I can't think of. I mean, it in a way, it did improve Oreck because some of the older, dilapidated buildings got torn down after the flood, but since the flood, Oreck's lost 100 students, the 93 flood, and that's a lot for a little community like this.
It always comes back to the school. Dave and Christy were there with Mayor Roger Thomas at the high school in 1967 when the tornado struck the school and killed two of their classmates. Maybe it was there, in that moment, that their passion for Oreck was really forged.
My heart's here, and it always will be here.
Is it partly what you've all been through together, do you think?
Yes, I think a lot of it is. I remember in 93 when Oreck was flooded, nobody could get in or out. Well, there was a gas station out on 210, and we all congregated out there, and we kind of shared stories and, you know, told what we'd heard or what they had heard. And it was just a camaraderie that we have with the people in Oreck. And
I mean, you've been fighting for this place for a long time.
Right, yeah. And my dad was president of the school board in 67 when we were in school. And the school board, you know, they got together, and we had class in some of the churches. We would have to walk from one class to another in town during all kinds of weather, because that was in January. And that just shows that each generation, we come back, we fight, and we take what we're given, and we keep going.
Like my wife said, your heart's in the place, but you got to consider all of what your grandparents did and your great-grandparents did to keep this community together. It's just the idea of what all the stuff that they've done over their lifetime, too. You know, it just kind of sticks in your heart, and you want to keep things going, you know.
Which brings us to Fubler's Cove, the restaurant we're gathered in. When I walked in here, I noticed a for sale sign in the window. From what I gather, if this place were to close, it would be a giant blow to Oreck. Fubler's has been owned and operated by Tim Heady for the past 22 years. He's a really busy guy. He's been here since 4 a.m.
Cooking off sausage, cooking off bacon, and all my hash browns, or I basically boil off my potatoes and I grate them. They're not a frozen hash brown, so they're all homemade. I'm going to say 85% of my stuff is made from scratch.
He does almost all of the cooking, plus mopping and sweeping.
and he's typically here until 10 p.m. You might say this work is in his blood.
I'm the third generation. My grandfather was in the restaurant business. My father was in the restaurant business. It's my life.
What brought you to Oryx?
Back home, I was having a hard time finding a job because my father sold the restaurant and he passed away and they sold it. So I come up here to find work, and I was walking down the street and I seen a for sale for lease sign on the building. And I went back home and sold my house and come up here and went in business.
So you saw a sign that's kind of like the sign that's in the window now.
Correct.
Tim loves running this business. He loves watching the kids in town grow up. But he's ready to let someone else do most of the work. And he's had a hard time finding even part-time help. Tim's had some health problems, so he really needs someone else to take over.
I will probably not close the place. I will work until I die, if it takes. But I prefer to retire, but I'll still be here in business no matter what.
Come on, we got to get going. Come on, John, let's go.
Back at Oryx Middle School gym class, Mayor and substitute teacher Roger Thomas is relieved to hear that.
I'm glad he said that because I was worried about it. I'm glad he told you that.
He sounds a lot like you. He's not letting the restaurant close. He would like to find someone to take over, but if they don't, he's just going to keep going.
I'm glad he told you that because that has been a huge worry for me because he has a for sale sign in the window and that concerns me.
Life in Oryx can seem cyclical. Another flood, another tornado, another guy walking down the street who sees a restaurant for sale and jumps in on an opportunity. Roger says he's developing a plan for someone to open a coffee shop next door to Fubler's Cove, one of his many dreams. But the question is, who will it be? You? Our time is up for today's show, but thanks for going with us on this trip to Oryx, Missouri. Do you come from a place that you feel has been left out of the discussion in journalism today? We'd like to fix that. Email us your suggestion for where to visit next. We are centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us @kcurcst. You can listen back to this documentary or any of our shows at kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, join us for a Screen Time episode all about Wonder Woman. Did the movie live up to your wildest dreams? Does it matter to you to have a superhero who's a woman? Tomorrow at 10, call us up with your story. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Danielle Hogarty is our intern, and Laura Ziegler spent a lot of time in Oryx, Missouri getting ready for today's show. Thanks, Laura, and thanks to everyone in Oryx who took the time to show us around. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Stay tuned.